It's certainly nice to have Richard with us today. First of all, Richard, we've had a lot of ophthalmologists on the air with us over the years, and we've certainly had a lot of optometrists on with us, but you are a physicist. So as a physicist, could you explain to us what fractals are?
Sure. So fractals are sort of a natural pattern that we see everywhere around us. For example, trees and clouds and rivers have got what we call these fractal patterns in them. And what they are patterns that repeat at different magnifications. So, for example, if you take a tree, if you look at its very sort of coarse patterns, that it's got a trunk with a few branches branching off. And if you zoom in on just one of those branches and look more carefully, you'll see that the smaller branches branching off that one. And then as you zoom in on that smaller branch, you'll see even smaller branches. And that repetition of the same patterns at different size scales generates this huge visual complexity, and that's what we label as a fractal. And it's all around us in our natural environment, but significantly it's also inside of us as well. So a lot of our nerves have fractal patterns, and a lot of our blood vessels, the bronchial tree that we use to breathe is also fractal as well.
There are projects out there now with retinal prostheses that use chips, electronic chip technology. What do you see as the problem with those projects?
Right, so that's right. There's a number of commercial endeavors now where a surgeon can actually take these small little silicon chips and put them in the back of the retina to replace regions that have been damaged by diseases such as macular degeneration. And basically what these chips do is they receive the light and generate little electrical signals, and they have to pass that electrical signal into the nerves in the retina for it to then go on to the brain, for the brain to understand that it's seeing. The problem is that the surgeon drops this little chip within the retina and then hopes that it will naturally attach to the healthy nerves. And that interface is where the big block is at the moment, that the chip is not integrating well with the healthy nerves in the retina. So although the little detectors in the chip are working, they're failing to pass their signal onto the nerves and onto the brain.
Could you explain the concept of 127 megapixels of the human eye?
Yeah, sure. So our retina is essentially a screen, much the way that in digital cameras, you know, we've got a little chip at the back of the eye as well. And what it's got is a whole array of these little detectors called photodiodes. And their job in both the eye and the camera is to receive light and then convert that into an electrical signal for, in our case, for the brain to understand it. And so that huge number, 127 million pixels, that's the number of detectors that a typical person has in their eye, and it's what allows them to see so well.
Could you explain the concept of nanoflowers?
Sure. So there's a whole area called nanoelectronics now, and what it's all about is making the little devices that appear in computers and iPods and telephones and whatever. If you can make all of those electronic devices smaller, then you can put more of them into a given computer, and that makes the computer more powerful. It can do more calculations. So through the years, there's been this huge endeavor in the electronics industry to make devices smaller and smaller. And the one that's prevalent in commercial technology at the moment is called microelectronics. And a micron is a million times smaller than a meter. Now, nanoelectronics is 1,000 times smaller than that. So a nanoelectronics device is 1,000 million times smaller than a meter. So incredibly small things. And then what we do is when we build these devices, we actually create them in the shape of a flower. And a flower is one of these fractal patterns that we were discussing earlier. So it has all of these sort of branch-like patterns, very, very similar to the fractals that you see in nature.
And what about the concept of diffusion-limited aggregation?
Right, so this is where the beauty of it happens, is when I say that we construct these nanoflowers, we don't really, what we do is actually just grow them. We sort of hijack a natural process. What we have is a little crucible of a metal, and we heat that crucible of metal up, and these particles, these nanoparticles, evaporate into the air, and then they get caught in a stream of gas, which causes the particles to carry until they slam into the surface of the chip. And then these particles, they roll along the surface, and then they gradually grow together into the nanoflower, like literally in front of our eyes. And that process where the particles meet and start to create this nanoflower is what's referred to as diffusion-limited aggregation.
And when it comes to metal nanoparticles, is there any concern that because of toxicity concerns that the metals could have an adverse reaction or cause an adverse reaction with the eyes?
That's a great question, and that's one of the challenges here. And what we have is a huge project underway called Safer Nanomaterials to make sure that this is exactly not what happens, that the things that we develop will not be toxic. So one of the beauties of the nanoflower design is that we can pretty much choose the type of material that we would want to use. So we're going to obviously be steering towards metals that are very friendly in the body, things that are not going to oxidize, things that are not going to induce toxins. But they are definitely firmly attached to the chip in the eye, so there's no possibility that these nanoparticles will detach and get into your bloodstream and head off to one of your organs to actually, you know, do some harm. So that's actually one of the advantages of our project, that it's going to be very, very user-friendly for implants in the body.
Richard, what are the similarities between the eye and the digital camera?
Well, they're getting more and more similar through the years, you know, as the technology improves. That, you know, we were just talking about the number of pixels in the human eye as being 127 million. Improvements in digital cameras now, you know, you can get a reasonably inexpensive camera with 16 million. So there's still a factor of 10 difference between the eye and the camera. That the eye, I think, is destined always to outperform the digital camera, but the gap between the two is getting less and less.
With whom have you worked on this research?
Well, we pull a number, as you can imagine, because it's so interdisciplinary with so many different challenges, we do, pull the resources. And one of our big collaborators is in New Zealand in Christchurch, a professor called Simon Brown. And he's the expert in actually growing the nanoflowers so that they actually more closely replicate the nerves in the retina. And he's a world expert in that. We're world experts in measuring the properties of these devices. So we're sort of sharing the work around, if you like, to make sure that we can get to our goal as quickly as possible.
How far along do you feel you are with this research?
We're doing very well. The reason why I'm very optimistic about it is because there are commercial groups who are already developing these chips, and they've shown that they can work, and we've identified the block in it all as being this specific interface. And so we know that parts of this system really do work. And we're actually, right now, we're growing nanoflowers and just changing their properties to make them work better. So I could imagine within the next 5 years, we will be in a position to have perfected these nanoflowers, to attach them to today's chips and hand them on to a surgeon and start to put them in someone's eye.
Finally, how can listeners get more information about this research?
Well, if they go to my website at the physics department at the University of Oregon, they will find a bit of information, and they'll also find my email address, and I'd be delighted to answer any questions that your listeners have.
Do you know what that website is?
It's quite a complicated one, but if you type in University of Oregon Physics Department, it will take you straight there.
Thank you for being with us today. We've been speaking with Dr. Richard Taylor, doctor because he has a PhD in physics. He's also the director of the University of Oregon Material Science Institute. And in addition to that, he's also not only a professor of physics, but he's also a professor of psychology and art at the University of Oregon. This is Ion Vision.